Hi, I'm Mal Majoros. I am an 8-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. So today we are talking to Carla K. Morton. She is a 2-time cancer survivor, breast cancer and colon cancer. She was also a Texas Poet Laureate. We're going to find out all about that in the coming half hour. How are you today, Carla?
I am doing well. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. So, you know, I've been getting your emails for a while now to my The Cancer Warrior Gmail, and you know, I'm just fascinated by your story and a poet laureate, and you've written so many books. Let's do what I always do. Let's jump right in and tell me how you found out about breast cancer, actually, in 2009.
Well, it was just a regular mammogram. You know, it's that thing that we do once a year, and mm-hmm. we don't give it a second thought. You know, it seems routine now, and for so many of us. But yes, just in there, and I recall the nurse said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I got to pull you extra tight to get way down there." And I said, "Oh, pull away, pull away." And thank goodness she did, because it was so low. It was nearly on the bone right underneath.
Oh.
And they saw it and, of course, do a biopsy. And, you know, we got the news from that biopsy that definitely it was cancer, and had to go after it.
Oh.
It was an aggressive one, and had to just dive into it, and your world goes in an uproar.
What did you have for your course of treatment?
Had surgery, a partial mastectomy,
mm-hmm.
then chemotherapy, and then radiation.
Oh, so that's how long was that? Did that
it
take?
Was about 9 months for the whole treatment. So it was a long 9 months too.
Oh, I know. I hear you. Now, were you writing at that time?
Yes, I write anyway. I as Texas Poet Laureate, that's just my job. That's what I do. But
cool.
I've been writing poetry since I can remember. I can't ever remember without being any place without a pencil and paper in my hand. And so I've just always written. And actually, that's a great tool
mm-hmm.
for people going through something like this, because to write it down, even if it's just a journal or even if it's just words over and over again, like, you know,
yes.
I hate this. Whatever it is you can write, it seems to take, I don't know, it seems to take a little bit of the pain off of it. You can look at it a little more rationally.
I agree.
And say, okay, you know, and then so I was writing poems about going through all of this and not expecting it to become any type of book. Actually, Dos Gatos Press called me, which in this whole writing world, that
yeah,
never happened.
Never.
Never. But I knew them. They knew I was going through the treatment, and they said, "We know you're writing about it." And I'm like, "Well, okay, yes." And they said, "We would really like to put a book of poems out about this." That turned into the book titled Redefining Beauty, and it's in its third printing right now.
Wow.
So it's you know, as a
that's okay.
But as a writer's perspective, to have something in its third printing is absolutely wonderful.
It is.
But it is kind of sad that there are that many people out there that need something like this.
How does one become a poet laureate, or Texas poet laureate as you are?
Well, I can speak for Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Texas has had one since 1932, actually one of the longest running states to have a poet laureate. In Texas, how it goes is they have a call for nominations every 2 years, and anyone can nominate anyone else for Texas Poet Laureate. All of the names go to the Texas Commission of the Arts,
mm-hmm.
and then they go through, and those who are actually qualified, they have a long list of criteria, and those that are qualified are invited to send in their resume, their portfolio, that type of thing. And then they take that big group down to a group of about up to 10 people. And then they send it back to Texas Commission of the Arts, sends it back to the governor, lieutenant governor, and Texas House of Representatives, who have people all across the state, educated in arts and literature. And that group of unknown people makes the final decision. So it's really a great honor. It's the greatest honor of my life.
So are you a Texas Poet Laureate until you decide not to be one, or for life?
Well, actually, most places it's a paid position.
Oh.
But in Texas, it never has been. But the trade-off is you have the title for life, even though they name one every year.
Oh.
You have the title for life, and it's like, okay, that's a good trade. We like that.
That is a good trade, yeah.
So you can be as active as you want to be.
And you're very active.
Yes, I absolutely love it. I've taken this title and tattooed it on my soul, and I go out there and I use that as an opportunity to talk poetry. And when I get a chance to go to these cancer support groups and fundraisers mm-hmm. and things like that, that's just a good way of bringing the writing aspect, the healing aspect of poetry into the hearts and minds of not only someone going through it, but their caretakers.
Right.
Because honestly, I think it's a little easier to go through something like that yourself than watching someone you love.
Oh, I agree.
Go through that. And I think that's actually been the success of this book, is because it actually gives people something to give to each other. You know, it gives them a gift to try to help them get through.
Well, and that's true. I mean, I know a lot of people blog, but I don't know of a lot of people who write survivors, that is, who write poetry. And do you find that when you do your speaking at the cancer centers and the support groups, that people get more interested into poetry? Because I know we were talking before the show, a lot of people enjoy poetry, but a lot of people might not say, yeah, I am into poetry. Raise your hand, you know, as far
as... Right. I know. I had someone ask me the other day, they said, well, why did you choose the type of writing that there's absolutely no money in? And I'm like, well, I didn't really choose it. It chose me.
Exactly.
You know, it is all heartfelt. And that's the nice thing about poetry in general. It just, so many people are just live on the surface, right? And this allows you just to dive deep into what's real in life. And I think when you're going through such a hardship as cancer, and it's the treatment too, you know,
oh, yes.
of cancer, that's just, it's just so horrid. And when you're going through something like that, your thoughts turn deeper anyway to the real meaning of why we're here and what our role is in life. And that's what poetry does. It can touch on all of that.
So did you find yourself writing while you were in treatment for chemo? Did you have Adriamycin, Cytoxan? What was your exact medication that you had? Therapy as
you know,
well. You try to forget that?
I'm trying to remember. and honestly, I was one of those people that, I mean, I had friends give me all these fact books and things like that. I threw them all away. I did not want facts or statistics.
Right.
My doctor did go over all of that with me, but I cannot remember, to be honest with you, what I know. I had that nasty purple Kool-Aid at the end, and anyone going through it knows about that nasty purple Kool-Aid. but I'm sorry, I can get that information.
Oh no, that's fine. I was just
like,
wondering.
That was not something that I focused on. I focused on, okay, I'll let the doctors do their job, and I will work with my creator and find that peace and find that joy again. You know, that's one thing about joy. That is the one rock solid in your life. That's something that you choose to have no matter what else is going on.
Right.
And no matter what other circumstances, to realize that all is well. No matter what, all is well. And then after that, it's a leap of faith.
That's true. And I think you're one of the first survivors who are just like, yeah, I don't know, it doesn't matter. I was living in the moment and finding your bliss and everything, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, and as far as teaching, what it teaches us, oh, my goodness.
Is,
you know, that there are really... no big issues out there.
I agree. You know, it's interesting how that puts completely everything into perspective.
It does. It really does. I mean, along with the the most basic, but there are no bad hair days.
That's true.
Everything else falls behind that.
So I'm looking at your website, TexasPoetLaureate.com, and this word, I'm sure I'm not the only person who asks you about ekphrastic. Is that the correct saying?
Oh, ekphrastic.
Yes. Yeah,
ekphrastic is just an old Greek word, and it means any art that inspires other art.
Oh.
So if you were at an art gallery and you see an amazing painting, and it inspires you to write a song or create a sculpture, or you hear an opera and you write a novel, or and it's any art that inspires other art. It's not restricted to one type of art or
wow.
the other.
I like that. That word needs to be used a lot more often.
Oh, it's a fantastic word. It is ekphrastic. You know, and that so many things in life are ekphrastic. And for a poet, the sunrise itself is a work of art, and just seeing the natural beauty of the world around you, it's just a constant inspiration. Every day, every single day, I wake up so excited knowing there's something out there that I'll discover, some great revelation. And I wake up so excited every day.
That's awesome. Now, speaking of, well, waking up excited, probably the day that you found out you had colon cancer was not one of those days. How did that happen? I know that's a weird segue, but I kind of try to use humor.
That's okay. You know, it was a good 5 years after the breast cancer. And again, just a routine colonoscopy. But my doctor was really, really pushing the colonoscopies.
Mm-hmm.
And he totally, I found out later, expected that. And going through all of the colon issues, so many people said, well, when did you have breast cancer? And I said, well, how did you know I had breast cancer? And they said, well, and what we see is 5 to 15 years after most every woman gets breast cancer, they have to deal with colon cancer.
Whoa.
And I'd never heard that.
I'd never heard that either.
And even though there is not a relation, there somehow is. There's some correlation between it. And so that's why he was pushing the colonoscopies. And again, it was just routine. I'd had one just the year before, and they found 2 polyps, and the doctor said, you know, one just looks wonky. That was his very technical term, wonky. And he said, normally, we would just look at it and look at it again next year. He said, but since you've had breast cancer,
That's good.
I want to go ahead and take it out and get to it. And sure enough, it was cancerous. And then they had to do, they take out about 18 inches of colon.
Whoa.
And that surgery was really, really difficult just to recover from. And then I had just a strange thing. 10 days after the surgery, I had a terrible pain. a terrible pain. And somehow in that 10 days, I had developed a hernia, and it ruptured, and it tore open went through my stomach, and it tore open the exact same place where they had just sewn up my colon.
You're like, come on.
Yeah. And I was like, really? Really? So, of course, back to the hospital, back 5 more days in the hospital.
Oh.
And so I think because I was so weak then, when I started that chemo, that's probably, I didn't tolerate that chemo very well at all. And the first 2 or 3 put me back into the ER. And it was a long year in 2014. And, you know, what I'd like to think is that in those years of, you know, 2009 and 2014, that there was some really great wines happening because there needs to be something good. But so many people I've talked to had a really tough 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we all have our demons, no matter what they are. It's how you get through them that matters.
So you basically had 2 years of your life taken from taken by cancer, I would say.
Yeah, two years. Yeah, I was in a fist fight with the devil. And I guess I was just too nice the first time around. Had to kick its dirty hairy butt the second time.
That's funny. So I'm checking out this book on your website. Excuse me. The book that's, we're going to talk about your new book in a second, but Redefining Beauty, that's in its third printing that we had talked about before. I mean, just reading a little bit about it, it just sounds like something that everyone who's at least a breast cancer survivor has gone through.
Yes. I get people sending me notes and calling me all the time going, this is exactly what I needed. I needed a little fire in my gut. I needed to know that someone out there was going through the same experience. And as you know, I mean, you feel so isolated.
Mm-hmm.
When you go through something like that, and it is nice to know that there are other people out there that have known that brand of hell.
And you were brave enough to have a photographer with you, which I would not have been.
Okay. Well, again, when I was writing, I did not know I was putting a book together. And Walter Eagleton is a photographer and a friend of mine. And I was on the square in Denton, Texas. And he's like, you know, you have a great head. And I'm like, I know, right? Because you don't know what kind of head you have until you're bald. And he says, hey, just for fun, why don't you come to my studio just for fun? Let's just take some pictures. And I went, oh, I don't know. And he's like, oh, no, come on, let's go have some fun. So we just did it. We were goofing around. We were having fun. And again, not knowing that a book was happening. I mean, I was writing, but not knowing what the future would be. And sure enough, yeah, those photos were perfect. And at the time of those photos, I still had my eyelashes and eyebrows.
Well, yes, that's good.
And so it looks better, you know. And I would always go to this place called the Jupiter House, which is this great coffee shop on the square in Denton, and because they make this really great iced mocha. And you know, after your treatments and you're just burning, and it's like, mm-hmm. and it always tasted so good. But I didn't wear a wig or a hat. I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just would get the biggest earrings I could find with my sunglasses on and just own the look. All right, Demi Moore did it, then I could do it.
That's true.
And
that's true.
So at this coffee shop, there's two universities in Denton, and students and professors and everybody hang out at this coffee shop. And a couple of weeks later, two college girls showed up, and they had shaved their heads. They didn't know why my head was shaved. I was just owning the look.
They just shaved their heads because?
Yeah. And I was like, I am a trendsetter.
You're like,
you know, one of the guys working there said, man, I wish my girlfriend would do that. And I'm like, well, good luck with that. Okay.
Yeah, you're like, not for the reason I did it, but yes.
Right. Well, I never let on. So, but
that's cool.
I love that. It's like, okay, the bald is the new black.
Exactly. And I'm the person who shaved my head, my hairdresser did. She, or stylist, whatever. She said, oh, yes. your head is really, you know, it's nicely shaped. And it's like, you know, they're saying that to you as you're like, I was in denial that I was going to lose my hair. And then it was coming out in the shower and I had pretty much long hair. So that was kind of traumatic. You know, and my boyfriend's like, I'll shave my head for you if you want. I'm like, that's great. But the last thing I want to do is see your bald head with my bald head.
Exactly. Yeah. People who are doing that, it's like, okay, that's sweet, but no, don't do that.
Someone in this family has to have hair. And if it's not going to be me, it's going to be you.
That's right. Yeah. Mine was about waist long first time around. And it would have been, as you know, for me, it would have been more traumatic to watch it fall out than to shave it. You know, just get a clean shave, just do it. And I was very proactive on the second round, too. It's like, okay, I know it's coming. And this one, they said I shouldn't lose my hair, but I did. It was starting to just fall out in clumps, and I hated that.
Oh,
so I was like,
no,
we're just going to just, right now, we're going to take care of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you went from that book now to your 10th book, you said, right?
Yes. So
that's amazing. How many? Well, when did you start writing? When did your first book come out? What year?
Let's see. My first book was a book CD. It's a very odd 17th century Scottish epic that's put to music, and it's just a whole lot of fun. But that was my first. That was in 07.
Oh, wow.
And, or 08. It was, I think, 07 or 08. I'll have to look, double check. And then I, well, of course, was writing during my process. It always takes a little while, you know, for books after they're written to actually become published. I have to find a publisher and that type of thing. And but it was great that on that day when I was you know, when the whole terrible diagnosis and everything the first time came around, but it was on that same day the following year when I was named, on the same day I got the call that I was named Texas Poet Laureate.
That's awesome.
So it was as if God was saying, you know what, we are so not done yet.
Yeah, we're not having you remember that day for this.
Exactly, exactly. And so I absolutely love that. And then the TCU book came after that. So I've been just pretty steady and
that's pretty amazing.
Getting books out there.
That's pretty amazing, because a lot of people, it takes a year, you know, you see these movies where, oh yes, I'm writing a novel, and then it's like, you know, they find it when they're like 75, and it's, oh yeah, but you know, you've written 10 books since 2008. That's awesome.
Thank you. I pinch myself sometimes.
Well, to see yourself and your books in a bookstore has to be pretty amazing.
Oh, that is the best thing. And to see them in a used bookstore is even better, because they get a second life, you know, in a used bookstore. It's like, okay, they're moving, they're traveling hands. That's what books should do. The book is an art form in and of itself. And as wonderful as so many digital things are,
I agree.
We can't forget that the book is its own art form, and it's a tactile thing. It feels good. It smells good. And when you can actually, you know, when you can track it going from hand to hand, I don't think it gets any better than that.
Well, and I'm a fan of some authors autographing my book, and it's like, here, will you autograph my Kindle? Oh, it's not the it's not the same.
You know what? That is so true. People don't even take that into consideration. Yes, and you know, that's enough. I'll bring that up, because that's a good point. Unless they have some kind of little area on the back.
That's not. Kindle. Oh yeah, don't mind that other author. I just, you know, this. But.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
But your 10th book, Delving, it's called Constant State of Leaping. Delving into Risk and Unfettered Joy, which is basically being a cancer survivor.
Well,
in its truest form,
it is. It is, and it's, I hope the reader takes great joy from that book. I'm a poet of moments, of tiny moments, and when you can see the absolute beauty and glory in every single moment, no matter how seemingly mundane, I think that's the secret to happiness. I think that gives life its color and its buoyancy, and it lifts us all up.
I agree. And being a cancer survivor, it's interesting how people get down on silly things like, oh, you know, besides like people having not enough money, but it's just like, oh, you know, I'm having such a bad day. My, you know, computer broke and it's frustrating and it's blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, okay, well, you know, that happens. But if your computer breaking down at work and, you know, someone's there to fix it, that's, you know, if that's the worst thing that happens to you today, then you're having a pretty good day.
Exactly. Exactly. It just reprioritizes everything. Mm-hmm. And you realize how lucky we all are just to be walking the face of the earth, you know?
Exactly. And I think it's funny, like, there's always going to be Debbie Downers in your life, and it's like, well, today is a terrible day, blah, blah. And I say, well, every day is a great day to be alive. And then some people just look at me like, well, that's kind of weird. You know, I mean, not like that's a weird thing to think, but that's a weird thing to say. Well, it's like, well, it is, you know?
Oh, right.
You got to take, you know, yes, you have bad days, but you also have very, very good days. So
that is absolutely right. And you know, and you learn also, I think, surround yourself with people that are just as optimistic as you are. I think, at least for me, going through it then, it's like, okay, I don't want the doom and gloomers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I've heard them called bucket suckers. I don't want those people
like
around
that.
Me. And it's like, no, I want, in one of the poems in there, it's titled, "Do You Really Think This Is Helping?" And it is, as a writer, as a poet, I carry a pad of paper around with me all the time. And if there's, because I can't remember anything, I've never been able to remember anything.
Chemo brain, I mean, 2-time cancer survivor.
Oh, yeah, and that just adds to it. So it's a whole lot worse from that.
That's why I was like, am I calling you? Are you calling me? I don't know what's going on. Seriously.
You know what? We'll figure it out. That's exactly right. But yeah, and so the things that would come out of people's mouths, that's probably that and Spock Thinks I'm Sexy are probably two of my most requested poems just in any poetry reading from that book, which always tickles me. But the one that says, "Do you think this is helping?" I started writing down because what was coming out of their mouths is just gold, right? For a writer,
mm-hmm.
It's like,
yes.
I couldn't make this up any better than this. And so everything in there, in that particular poem, is something somebody said to me that actually came out of their mouth that I'm like, really? You are just saying this out loud. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I had somebody ask me, I said, "Oh, you have cancer. Oh, are you going to die?" And I was thinking, well, not right now, not here. I'm not planning on it. Like at the right
How
here
about
in the
you?
In the grocery store? I don't think so.
I know. It just it's that stupidity, and I don't know if they're probably just not even thinking about
no.
what they're saying, but then they want to say something, but it's like, really?
Really? Did you just say that to me?
Yeah. So that's a great one of the funniest poems in there, I think, because it was everything someone actually said those words.
And I think any cancer survivor can relate to that when somebody says, "Oh yeah," or something like, "Well, my Aunt Susie died from, you know, colon cancer,
right.
breast cancer."
Oh, yeah.
It's like, well, that's not.
Oh yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I equate being bald from that to being 9 months pregnant. You know how you were 9 months pregnant, very obviously pregnant. Okay.
Right.
There's just no denying a 9 months pregnant woman. And I don't know if you've ever had that opportunity to be 9 months pregnant, but people just would come out of the woodwork and tell you their most horrible birthing story they'd ever heard in their life. And they're just going, you know, I was in labor for 20 hours and my baby had two heads. And just, you know, you're going, stop it. Stop telling me that.
Like, thanks.
Yeah. And that's how it was, I felt like, especially when there was no denying you were going through something, because when you've lost your eyelashes and eyebrows
right.
and you get that beautiful, sleek, eel-like look to the face, it does have its own beauty. It definitely does.
It does.
But it's like, really, you're saying that to me now?
And like I said at the beginning of the, or even before the show, I didn't think that we'd have any problems talking a half hour, and here it is. We're almost over. So Constant State of Leaping is the new book.
Yes, I'm very proud of that. The Texas Review Press published that for me. And, you know, anyone who publishes poetry in this day and age is doing it out of a labor of love. And
yes.
So I'm very grateful to them. And it is probably something I'm most proud of. The poems in there are ones that I'm just so happy that they have a life of their own and they're moving on. And it won the North Texas Book Festival Award.
Awesome.
And it was an award winner in the Eric Hoffer Book Awards, and in a category, it was first runner-up in the poetry category. And it was nominated for the Montaigne Medal. So it has gotten some attention out there, and just that tickles me.
And you kind of know what you're doing there. So that's what they're talking about.
Well, I have fun. I'm really, really blessed to be able to do what it is I love to do. And I think in this world, it doesn't get any better than that. If you can do every day what it is you absolutely love to do, you're a very lucky person.
That's true. And with that, Texas Poet Laureate Carla K. Morton, TexasPoetLaureate.com is the website. Thank you so much for joining me today, Carla.
Oh, thank you so much. And, you know, God bless you for what you do. This is just an important service and that you do. And that what you can do to reach out to people is amazing. So thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you so much. If you hang on, I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mal Majoros. I'm the Cancer Warrior. My website is finally fixed, thecancerwarrior.net. Check me out on Facebook, The Cancer Warrior, on EmpowerRadio.com. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes, it's The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.